So a tantrum tends to be around something where a kiddo is not getting what they want, and the big feelings that they're having would be kind of quickly solved by having whatever it is that they are wanting met. A meltdown is much more about a release of emotions and a loss of control.
Are you overwhelmed by motherhood and barely keeping your head above water? Are you confused and frustrated by how all the other moms make it look so easy? You can't figure out how to manage the chaos in your mind, your home, or your family. I get you, Mama. Parenting with ADHD is hard. Here is your permission slip to let go of the Pinterest-worthy visions of organization and structure fit for everyone else. Let's do life like our brains do life. Creatively, lovingly, and with all our might. When we embrace who we are and how our brains work, we can figure out how to live our lives successfully and, in turn, lead our families well. At the end of the day, we just want to be good moms. But, spoiler alert, you are already a great mom. ADHD does not mean you're doomed to be a hot mess, Mama. You can rewrite your story from shame spiral to success story. And I'll be right here beside you to cheer you on. Welcome to Motherhood in ADHD. Hey there, successful mama. It's your friend, Patricia Sung. Today's guest is Dr. Laura Froyen of the Balanced Parent Podcast. Laura combines trauma-informed practices with the latest child development research to help mamas like us find more peace, calm, and connection within our family. She specifically teaches conscious parenting and communication, and she just like overflowing with grace and compassion. And I absolutely adore following her on Instagram. Like, I have learned so much from her. And the best part is that she's an ADHD mama like us. She has two young girls, so she's walking the walk, not just talking the talk. Now, you all did not disappoint. I asked you in our Facebook community and in my student community of what questions you had for Laura about kids with big emotions. Well, when you have ADHD, it is far more likely that your kids will also have ADHD. In fact, it's between 50 and 70%, whereas your average Joe is just going to be somewhere around 5, maybe 10% tops. So us having ADHD means it's far more likely that our kids do. And since we have big emotions, they have big emotions too. And you combine them together and you get tornado-like forces and hurricane-level winds. So how do we teach our kids to regulate if we aren't even sure how to regulate ourselves? Not to worry. Laura goes into all of this and more. We talk about tantrums versus meltdowns, how we can allow our kids to borrow our regulation when they are struggling, as well as her three questions to ask when our kids are struggling. How do we help them solve the problem? Because while we surely would like to solve it for them, wouldn't you know that they might be the best experts on how to solve the problem for themselves? Before we get into our episode, I just want to give you a little hint that next week is my birthday and perhaps there's a little treat in store for you. So be sure to listen to next week's episode and I'll fill you in then. So let's open up Pandora's box and dig into those emotions. Mamas, let's welcome Dr. Laura Froyen to the show today. How are you doing this morning?
Hi. Oh my gosh. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. I've been waiting for this episode for a while and I cannot wait to dive in. And it is perfect timing because we had a huge meltdown this morning. I was like, oh, now I have plenty of questions to discuss.
Wonderful. Meltdowns, I think, are just wonderful opportunities for us to figure out what's not working in our lives or where we need to slow down or where we need a bit more space.
So I would say, I want to dig into that. So first, can you just share a little bit about specifically what you do with families right now? So our moms can kind of have like that understanding of your background and experience into like how this will actually help them in their day-to-day lives now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have my PhD in human development and family studies with a specialization in marriage and family therapist. And for a long time, I was a practicing therapist, a researcher, and a professor. And I just got really frustrated with how long it took for stuff from the research world to get out into the hands of the families that needed it most. You know, I left academia. Now I get to work with families all over the world, helping them find more meaningful connection with the people that matter most in their lives, their partners, their kids, and themselves. And so I do that with my podcast and other free resources. And then I also am spending a lot of time in my membership lately. We get together and hang out once a week and answer questions. Yes, I mean, that's what I'm doing these days.
Okay. And so I had you in the back of my head of like, okay, I definitely want to talk with Laura at some point, but actually it came up in one of my classes and we meet every Wednesday and just like, sometimes it's talking about what's in the class, but sometimes it's just like moms are struggling with something and we just need a group of moms to like hear it and offer solutions. And this came up and I was like, ooh, it's time for Laura to come on. Like this was the question that came up of like, when our kids have these huge emotions, what do we do? Especially with the filter of all of these women in my group have ADHD. So we're trying to regulate ourselves on top of regulating our kids and all. I mean, it's just a tornado of emotions. So that's kind of like where we're heading today.
Okay.
Like, let's roll back a little bit and just start like, do we even know why kids have such big emotions?
Well, yes. The part of the brain that regulates emotions is really underdeveloped in kids, right? So that part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, kids will be working on developing until they're like 24, 25, 26. So it's understandable that when they have big feelings, it's hard for them to control them. I think it's really important to understand that kids are emotionally inexperienced. Things that seem really small to us because we've got a lifetime of experiences with loss, disappointment, grief, you know, excitement, but our kids are new to this world. Sometimes they are feeling something for the first time, and sometimes they are feeling it the most that they've ever felt it before, and sometimes they literally don't have the vocabulary to express what they're feeling. They don't know what it is, they just know that it's big and it's got to come out. And kids are really beautiful in that way. We feel like so much like we've got to bottle it up, keep it inside, hide it. Kids don't have the ability to do that, nor do they know that they should, and I say should very loosely. Because I don't think any of us should. I cry all the time. It's a beautiful and lovely release. Crying is actually one of the most beautiful ways that our bodies get stress out of the body too. So you can measure the cortisol level of tears, which is quite beautiful. It's one of the ways that our bodies release stress hormones. I mean, so there's all of those things come into play around why kids have meltdowns. I think it's important to know the difference between a tantrum and a meltdown too. That can be really helpful. I don't know if you want to go into that.
That's one thing I've noticed, that the more that I've dove into this subject, is the awareness has just made me a lot more patient. So I think that's something I do want to touch on, because that even just being aware of that made it a lot better.
Okay, so a tantrum tends to be around something where a kiddo is not getting what they want, and the big feelings that they're having would be kind of quickly solved by having whatever it is that they are wanting met. So if they are, you know, ask for ice cream and you say, no, we're not having ice cream right now, we can have it with dinner in 30 minutes, and they just lose it, I want ice cream, they're, you know, stomping, kicking around, and you were to go in and say, okay, fine, you can have ice cream, which you shouldn't do, because consistency and limits and, you know, good boundaries. But if you did, and they would be like, okay, and skip off and merrily eat the ice cream, like, you know that that was a tantrum. A meltdown is much more about a release of emotions and a loss of control. And so when we think about a kiddo, and I don't know what happened this morning with your child, but sometimes there's just this moment where they can't take anymore. They've been regulating, they've been trying to hold it together, and then it's just the very last straw and they lose it. And that's often what we're talking about when we talk about meltdowns for kids.
So when we have these two situations, how do we know what's the right path to go down? Because obviously if our kid is just grumpy about not getting what they want, it's a very different process on our part than my kid is so overwhelmed they literally cannot do anything else right now. What's the right path to go down when you're on that split? And like, as a mom, you're looking at the situation being like,
yes. So I think the very first thing you want to do is get regulated yourself. So in either scenario, if you're dysregulated, if you're heightened, your thoughts are racing, if your heart is racing, if you're feeling flushed, you're not going to be a good partner for them, because little kids, they need us. When babies are born, they're other regulated, and they spend the first 8 years of their lives learning how to be self-regulated. So if your kiddo is four, they're right in the middle of that, and they still need to borrow regulation from us a lot at four. And so we have to get ourselves regulated. We have to have a series of mantras or affirmations or things kind of we can pull out and say to ourselves to remind us that this is not an emergency. No lesson is being lost here. You know, I don't need to jump straight to like punishments or consequences. Right now I can just be in the moment with them, that all feelings are welcome in our home, that all feelings have information to share, there's space and room for all of them, and that most feelings last about 90 seconds. So we can hold on. If we can just hang on for 90 seconds and ride that wave for ourselves, a little bit of breathing, a little bit of, it's going to be okay. We're right here. We're here in this moment. This is a really hard moment, but I'm here with myself. And then we can start loaning that kind of be that presence to our kids. And I think, you know, it's interesting that whether it's a tantrum or a meltdown, the approach isn't very different, especially like if we're not going to be giving in to what it is that they want. Now, if it's a moment where like we've set a limit and we kind of set it unconsciously, we kind of set it out of habit, just out of rote, kind of like, no, you know, just kind of the habit of saying no that parents have. I know I do. My first response is no, most of the time. Like I have to be really aware of that. There's room for being like, whoa, oh goodness, honey, I did not realize how important this was for you. Let's slow down for a second. And you slow down, you help them get regulated, and then you move to curiosity and find out what was so important about having that ice cream right then. And then you find out that earlier in the day, dad had promised you could have an ice cream for afternoon snack, but he didn't communicate that to you. And so you didn't know, and then it got missed, and then they just remembered, and they're very disappointed that they didn't get to have it for, you know, there's these extenuating circumstances that you had no idea about. And the tantrum seemed way overboard to you, but to them, there's betrayal and disappointment and parents not living up to their promises. Like these are big things, you know? And so once you get that information, then there's room for flexibility. Oh, my sweetheart, I didn't know. I didn't know that that was the plan. You know, so apologizing and empathy, of course it makes sense. You just remembered now and you're really disappointed that we forgot. And now you're upset because I said no without really knowing what I was saying no to. So lots of empathy and validation and helping the child verbalize what's going on, because young children often can't even say, Mom, Dad promised me ice cream earlier and you forgot and I'm really disappointed that I didn't get it. They can't say that, right? They just say like, you're the worst mommy ever. I hate you. You know, like that's what comes out. But what they really mean is that I'm having a really hard time. I was expecting ice cream. I was looking forward to it all day. And now you say I have to wait even longer. Well, who's to say you won't forget again? Who's to say we're not going to eat dinner and then I've forgotten because I have a brain that doesn't remember lots of things. I don't have a lot of working memory, you know, and for us moms with ADHD, like, you know, we do not remember things from time to time. Like that's the reality for our families at a certain point. And so why not bring that to the surface and talk about it and figure out a way like, okay, I can tell that you're really concerned. I still can't let you have ice cream 30 minutes before dinner. I just can't because then your body won't be ready for dinner, but let's figure out a way so that we don't forget. What are some ideas that you might have about the ice cream? Can we get Alexa to remind us? Can we put a sticky note on mom's forehead, you know, so that we don't forget, or a sticky note on the mirror in the bathroom where we wash our hands before dinner so that we see that note? Like, can she, the kiddo, draw an ice cream cone and tape it to that mirror where you wash your hands before dinner so that nobody forgets? These are all things where you can be collaborative with your kiddo, but you really can't do that until they felt seen and heard. And with meltdowns, the process is very similar. It's dropping into the present moment. Whoa. Slowing down. Kids get really overwhelmed at times if we try to talk too much when they're in their big feelings. I know lots of kids yell at parents if they try to talk about their feelings. They say, no, don't say that. So even being just really quiet and you know, can be good too. Or just saying nothing. Or like in a calm time, asking your kid, like when you're having a hard time, what do you want me to do? Because I love you and I want to support you, but it seems like it makes you mad. Like when I talk about feelings, or it seems like it makes you uncomfortable when I try to hug you. So what would be better for you when you're really upset? And they usually have really good ideas.
a couple of the key things that stood out to me is, one, you said our kids need to borrow our regulation because they don't have any. And so as moms with ADHD, like when we don't feel regulated, it's like you get the whole like guilt and shame and all that goes with it. But knowing that it's okay to focus on our regulation first and like breathe a little bit and like, whoo, okay, pull back.
Because
like 90 seconds feels like a really long time in the moment. But really, if you're taking that 90 seconds to calm your panic down, the whole meltdown slash tantrum, whatever it is you're dealing with, will end a lot faster if you take that 90 seconds on the front end.
Absolutely. And just to highlight this too, like, I don't mean stuffing your feelings. I don't mean that, like, do you know what I'm talking about? That, yes. Like, okay, you know,
shove
it down and make it through. Get in the car, let's do it, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, like, really letting the feeling move through you and out of you, as opposed to trapping it in your body. There's so much research that parents, especially moms, really set the emotional tone of the home, the emotional environment. It really impacts kids a lot. And so we're incredibly powerful. That can feel burdensome at times, especially if things feel crazy for us, you know, but we're really powerful. Like, I hope that that feels really empowering to everybody who's listening, that like, we actually have a lot of, you know, just by taking care of ourselves, just by being kind to ourselves, just by allowing ourselves to be imperfect humans that are worthy of compassion, we have a lot of power in our homes to make that atmosphere for our kids too, so that, gosh, it just feels a little bit easier to be imperfect. Because kids need that grace and compassion just as much as moms do.
Yeah, at first it does feel overwhelming, like to know, like, oh my goodness, like a lot of moms will take this and be like, I am responsible for all of you. And it's not that.
I get to like get it, you know, like, yeah, like it's an opportunity.
I get to steer this. And mm-hmm. you don't have to like solve it all tomorrow. It's not like tomorrow you're like, okay, well, today we're going to be a family who rides out our feelings and everything's different today. No, it's like, it's a step-by-step process. One of the things I've recently been working on is, instead of stuffing my feelings, I just state them as fact of like, I'm getting frustrated right now because I don't feel heard. I need to take a second. I'm not giving anybody blame. I'm not actually solving much.
Yeah.
The fact that I take that moment and like, I'm checking in with myself and like being able to state what I'm feeling slows me down, because otherwise I call it mommy Medusa. So mommy just comes out like at bedtime when I'm frustrated and like all the snakes are hissing and biting and spitting poison or whatever. And if I can state how I'm feeling, that like pulls me back enough to be like, okay, I am frustrated. I feel like I'm not being heard. Okay. And like, I don't think I'm solving much yet, like, but I'm working forward to like, I'm slowing myself down so that I can make a better choice next. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, Patricia, it makes so much sense. You probably know this, but you're doing two really powerful things there at that moment in time too. One, you're stepping fully into your power by taking responsibility for your emotions, not putting your emotions and your feelings and your reactions on anyone else. You're really stepping fully into your power by saying out loud, I feel frustrated, I feel overwhelmed, I need a moment to take care of myself. I need a moment to just gather my thoughts, right? So you're taking full responsibility for your feelings. This is an incredibly powerful thing, because in many families, and for most of us, we're looking to put responsibility for our feelings outside of ourselves, because it's uncomfortable. Like, it just is. It's uncomfortable to take responsibility for our stuff. We're humans, you know, it's true.
That was my problem at the beginning of like, when I first became a mom, is I was like, you are making me mad.
Yeah.
You are making me frustrated. And I'm like, how am I like putting this responsibility on like a 2-year-old? Like, and I honestly don't remember at what point somebody said this on like some podcast, where they were like, your kid is not responsible for your feelings. And I was like, oh,
and this is
just a punch in the gut. And then yeah. I was at the moment of like, okay, that's true. They're not. So how do I take responsibility for that?
Exactly. And it's really hard if we grew up in codependent homes. Like, so if we grew up in a home where we were made to feel responsible for our family's feelings, this is really trippy and hard to do. And there's back and forth on it. So like, expect, if you're making, you know, those of you who are listening where you're going to like, ooh, expect there to be backsliding, expect there to be like missteps and hiccups as you're learning this, as you're figuring it out. You don't have to get this perfect.
Hey mama, have you been over to my website and grabbed any of the free ADHD resources I've got? You can make your mornings more peaceful, overcome time blindness hurdles, learn ways to treat your ADHD beyond the obvious medication option, or grab a copy of all of my favorite ADHD resources on one page. You can snag these all on my website at patriciasung.com/resources, and I'll email you the PDF or the video.
Now, don't go putting in your spammy junk email, okay? I'm not gonna send you junk. I email you once, maybe twice a week. For sure, I'll send you a note about this week's podcast topic, and if I'm having a particularly organized week, I might email you again about what's working for my ADHD this week, or venting about whatever executive function disaster happened. Your inbox is where I spill more of the beans, and if you change your mind, you can always unsubscribe, right? Plus, I really love hearing back from you, so write me an email back. Tell me what's going on in your life or what you want to learn about next. So go grab those free goodies, and I'll see you in your inbox.
The other really cool thing that you were doing when you say that out loud to your family, Patricia, I'm feeling frustrated and overwhelmed right now. I need a break. You are modeling self-regulation. You're modeling for your kids what they need to do when they're having those feelings. And I guarantee the more you do it out loud, the more you will hear your kids saying, I'm frustrated. I need a break. Don't talk to me. They might not be as eloquent and kind in their delivery. They might say like, shut up or go away. We just need to have a really good filter for interpreting like what shut up or go away or I hate you means. It means I'm frustrated. I'm overwhelmed. I need a minute. Like we can be totally relaxed and chill about the delivery. That will come down the road when they have more access to language and more access to the self-regulation to get nicely phrased. Mom, I'm frustrated with you. I need a moment. Don't come into my room. You know, like that will come in time.
Yeah, but there's funny thing is though, we expect little kids in their frustrated yes. and angry moments to use that kind of language with us. And we're like, don't be disrespectful to me. Don't you talk to me like that. And like,
use your words.
Why are you expecting? Yes. Like, there's, because like, this was part of my like revelation where I was like, why am I expecting a 4 or 5 or 2 year old to be able to say that to me when I can't say it myself?
As a yeah. parent. I mean, kids are really good at making us grow up, right? Of like encouraging us to grow up. It's hard though. I would just want everybody who's listening though to know like this is not, I make this mistake all the time too. Like I'm learning like right alongside you. We don't get this right the first time. And there are some people out there who will hear this and will never do it again. And that's wonderful. But I wasn't one of those people. Like, conscious, respectful parenting is hard daily work for me. It does not come naturally. And that's okay to be where I am. That's many of us are in a position in our families where we're the people who are changing our family's path. We're this inflection point where the direction of our families are going to change for generations to come. And we can really only do the best that we can in this generation and trust that the next generation will have their work to do and it will keep going. Some families are further along in our generational story of healing, and we are where we are, and that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, because I think that was the other key thing for me when you were talking is that you gave a way for us to back out of our no yeah. without backing out of our no. Same with me. It's like if my kids are asking me something and I'm cooking dinner, it doesn't matter what they ask me. I'm like, no, I'm trying to cook dinner. No, the answer is no. I don't care what you're asking me. No. And when it turns out that it's like, you know, there's the whole backstory that you don't know, when we give them the chance of like explaining what it is, then we have that moment to being like, okay, I didn't realize all that was going on. And then you can choose your actions appropriately, but it's not just you giving in. Don't just give in to whatever they want. Okay, well, yeah, if your dad already promised you ice cream, I understand why you're that upset. So maybe I would change my mind, but then I feel like, but now I'm changing my mind. So to yeah. allow that dialogue exchange, like the communication means that now I can eloquently change my mind without looking like I just gave you whatever you wanted.
Yeah. And you know what? Like also like perfect invitation to change your mind. I think oftentimes as parents, we are really worried about our kids thinking we're flaky or our kids thinking that they can get whatever we want, that we'll be permissive or, you know, that we will kind of be doormats for them, that they can just kind of get whatever they want. I know that lots of parents are really worried about that. But what I was talking about is not the same thing as being permissive. So them saying, can I have ice cream? You saying, no, it's 30 minutes before dinner. You can have ice cream with dinner. And then throwing a fit and us being like, oh, don't cry, don't cry. Okay, you can have ice cream is much different than sitting with them. Oh gosh, you're really disappointed. Wow, I didn't realize this was so big. Oh, there's this whole backstory. Wow, I didn't understand. And then even if you were going to say like, yes, of course, let's get the ice cream. I really didn't know. Let's get the ice cream. The energy behind that is entirely different. The first one tells the kids, I'm afraid of your big feelings. I can't handle you when you're like this. I'll give you whatever you want. Just make you stop crying and stuff your feelings with food. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Versus the other one is like, oh, my mom gets me. Oh, my mom cares about me. Oh, my mom is here to listen to me. Oh, we're on the same team. We're going to figure this out together. The message is entirely different, even if the outcome is the same as that kid is eating ice cream 30 minutes before dinner. And the other thing, like, that's really important that you have to weigh in those moments and think about, like, what is more important to me right now? Like, what's on the line? Is my child being able to trust me and my partner that we're going to live up to our word, that they can trust us and believe what we're going to say and hold true to our word? Is that a value in our family? Or is like one meal where they eat a little bit less protein and a little bit more ice cream? Like the long game, what am I really worried about here? Yeah, normally we're not going to eat ice cream 30 minutes before dinner. But ultimately, do I want my kid to trust me? Yeah, for sure. I mean, and this is what conscious parenting is about. It's about being really intentional and mindful and understanding that when we communicate with our kids, we're communicating a lot to them. Not just our literal words, but our values, our priorities, how we feel about them. And we got to be really intentional about it. And of course, like, you can't be conscious all the time. Everybody has unconscious moments, you know. But when our kids have those tantrums and meltdowns, they are a wake-up call. Like, they are most of the time moments where we have been being unconscious, and they are calling us to drop into the present moment and get into a moment with them, to be fully present with them. And we just gotta, you know, let them guide us the best way that they know how. And oftentimes that's with crying and meltdowns.
Yeah, they are using the tools they have.
And they're beautiful. They are working with what they got. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Like, our kids are this beautiful, wonderful gift, a beautiful invitation to our own healing and growth that I'm so grateful for most of the time. Sometimes I wish my kids, you know, but at the same time, you know, I have one kid who calls me to healing and growth a lot more than the other kid. And I wouldn't change it for the world, because I'm doing a lot of good work. You know, I'm doing a lot of good growing up here in my late 30s.
Yes. Okay. I do want to get a couple of questions in here, because I posted not only in our student community, but on the Facebook page of my student community, like group of moms on Facebook, and asked everyone, like, what do you have questions about when it comes to kids with big emotions? And there were a lot, so we won't be able to get to all of them, but I do want to touch on a couple of things. The first one is, how do we honor our kids when they say that they're scared to do something, when they don't want to do it, but they still have to do it? So for example, like, they need to go to bed, but they're saying they're scared. And you're not really sure, like, are they really scared, or they know that if they're scared, I'll stay, or like they're scared to go to school, and it's things they still have to do.
Yeah.
How do we honor that feeling, but yet also still be good parents?
So you just said that kids are using what they've got to work with, right? So even if we do have the sense that they're just saying they're scared in order to get us to stay, I think it's really important that we not see that as manipulation. It can feel manipulating, but that's not what it is. This is a child recognizing, I have this need. In the past, when I've said I'm scared, my mom stays, I really want mom to stay, and so I'll use this thing. That's not the same thing as manipulation, right? That's getting needs met. So that's beautiful. And there are developmental things that go, phases that this goes through. For kids in the 3 to 5 range, they're in this really interesting place, attachment and brain development wise, that does make separating harder. So around 2.5 is when separation anxiety really starts cropping up a lot, and that can maintain through 5 or 6, because kids' cognitive ability to kind of know mom exists outside of me, dad is out at work or out home while I'm here at school, or mom and dad are watching shows while I'm sleeping, or mom and mom are cleaning the kitchen while I'm supposed to be falling asleep. They know we're apart from each other. And at the same time, they don't have the cognitive ability to call up a mental representation, is what it's called, a mental representation of their attachment figure, and derive security from the idea. So like, if we have, you know, a good relationship with our partner or with our mom, we can picture them in our mind and get like kind of warm, connected feeling from them, from just the idea, just thinking of them. But 3, 4, 5-year-olds can't do that. And so oftentimes when they're saying they're afraid or they're lonely or they just want you to stay, that's what they're talking about. They want to feel connected to you. I mean, there's a lot you can do for a kiddo to help them feel safe and connected in their bed. And that really what I would want parents to be doing is to ask the kid what they need. So, hey, buddy, I've been noticing it's been hard to say goodnight at bedtime, or I've been noticing it's been hard to say goodbye at the bus stop. What's up? and let them tell you, I don't like being apart from you, I'm nervous. Find out what it is. If there's a kid who's being mean on the school bus or there's a part in school that they don't like, validate those things and ask them. So the three questions I always recommend my community ask kids when we're talking about problems, is this something you just want me to listen to? Is this something you want me to give you advice on? Or is this something you want me to get involved in? And this can be more for older kids than for the little ones. And then if they're really, it comes down to, I miss you. I don't want to be apart from you. I want you to stay with me while I fall asleep, or I want to spend my day with you and not go to school. Then you can ask them, what would make it easier for us to be apart? Or what would help you feel connected to me even when we have to be apart? You know, so some kids love to have a special stuffy that's just between them and their parent. There's lots of little rituals you can do. The books, The Invisible String, and A Kissing Hand for Chester Raccoon are both beautiful representations of this process. It's a kind of a developmental universality that the kids go through this. And so my six-year-old still wants kissing hands every night before bed and every day before school. So figuring out what works for your kid to help them feel connected and soothed. But I think the other thing is important to really understand that just because a fear that they're saying they have doesn't make sense to us or seems just nonsensical to us doesn't mean it's not real to them. Just like, you know, if we're the ones who have anxiety or ADHD and our partner doesn't, it can be hard for our partner to understand. But if they ever came to us and said, like, that's not real, like, you're just kind of making things harder than they need to be, how would we feel? Yeah. It'd be terrible. And I'm sure, like, we probably have had partners say those things to us, because sometimes our stuff does feel not real to other people who've never experienced it. And so we really want to be careful with that with kids. I think their experience is just as valid in the world as ours.
I think the last one I want to hit before the lightning round questions is that kind of like the theme in here, when I look at all the different questions, most of, like, obviously when you have ADHD, your kids are far more likely to have it as well. Yeah. So when your kids are having a meltdown from sensory issues, so it can be anything from a loose tooth or scratchy clothing or, you know, whatever it is, that sensory overload, is there anything we can do to help them when they're feeling that way in that situation?
Yeah. Okay. So for most of us who have kiddos like this, who are super sensitive or who we're sensitive ourselves, we can see these things coming. So even if we can't always predict when, like, the day it's going to happen, things like this have happened before. And if something is predictable, like, we know, like, this stuff is tricky. Like, I always know the clothing transition for my sensory kid is really hard when they have to go from wearing short sleeves to long sleeves. That feels really uncomfortable in their bodies, or when they have to move into wearing mittens. It's a huge battle. And so I know that that's coming. And if we can get ahead of it and get proactive, we know, like, our kids have sensory meltdowns. That happens for our kids. We can make a plan for them. Okay, so if we have a time where we feel really uncomfortable in our body or the world seems too much, what can we do to make the world a more comfortable place for you? And have, you know, a little stuffy that feels really good to them. My kid has been loving, there's this product called a Purrble. I don't ever talk about products and brand names, but it's so cute. It's this little animal that's like a Furby, like from when we were kids. Do you remember Furbies? It's not annoying like they used to be. And it's, what you do is you turn it upside down and it gets dysregulated, and then you hold it and can feel its heartbeat, which starts racing, and it makes these kind of uncomfortable noise, and then you stroke it and pet it to calm it down. Like, it's a co-regulation tool. It's super great. My kid has been loving it. I'm not affiliated in any way. I just found it, and my kid loves it. Yes, yeah. But what's nice about that is it has this really soft texture. You know, it has a sound that's really soothing. So helping them tap into all of their senses. You know, so when you're really upset and having a hard time, is there something that you'd like to be able to smell? Or is there a way you'd like to be able to remove smell so you're not smelling anything? Is there something that you'd like to be able to look at? Or are things really overwhelming? Should we make sure, like, we have a blindfold so you can't see anything ready to go? Do we have headphones that cancel noise available for you if you need it? Is there a weighted blanket that you want to make sure that we just kind of have one on every floor of the house so that if any point in time you need it, like, make a plan. Like, don't be caught by surprise by this stuff anymore. Like, that's just good coping tools too, like, to be teaching our kids. Like, we don't have to be caught by surprise by any of this. This is something that, you know, if we have ADHD, if our kids do, like, we're going to be, it's not going to go away. It's going to be with us, our lovely friend, for the rest of our life, and we're going to have to figure this out. So much better to figure it out young, you know, than later when we're older, like most of us are having to do.
Okay. I have seriously,
I'm sorry.
Like you guys can't see, but I have like 2 pages of questions here from y'all. So definitely have to have Laura back, but let me go ahead and hit our lightning round question. So on these, you just fill in the blank. You don't have to explain anything. Just
okay.
Fill it in.
Okay. Okay.
Number one, the best thing that I've read or listened to recently is?
I'm reading this book called The Enchanted Life, and it's really lovely about connecting with nature.
Okay. Number two, the most boring about me fact is?
I've been to almost all of the 50 states. I'm missing North Dakota.
I am missing North Dakota and Alaska.
Oh, fancy that.
We'll have to go to North Dakota together. Okay.
I know, right? Okay, retreat in North Dakota.
Number three, when I'm having a rough day, my go-to quote, song, book, poem, activity, whatever, is?
A cup of tea and coloring.
Number four, don't tell anyone I?
Don't meditate very often.
Number five, if I had a magic fairy wand for one spell, I would?
Make all schools have access to mental health for their kiddos.
Number six, my best piece of advice for mamas with ADHD is?
Be kind to yourself.
And then if you could just tell us, how do we connect with you? Where can the mamas find you and learn more about what you do?
Yeah, so come connect with me on Instagram. I'm just Laura Froyen, PhD over there. And then the Balanced Parent Podcast is where I'm doing most of my current work. But you can always DM me or email me. I'm here for you. We're not alone in this. We don't have to be alone.
Yeah, and that, I think, is one of the best parts about connecting with other women who are dealing with the same things, is that we can see that we're not alone and that there are options and resources and choices out there so that we don't have to struggle by ourselves. So I highly recommend. I recently took one of Laura's classes on siblings. Highly recommend. So go find her, check her out, and get connected. There's help out there for when we're struggling.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Patricia, for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
For more resources, classes, and community, head over to my website, motherhoodinadhd.com.